The People's Briefing, the COVID crisis behind bars. New York State locks people up for not paying or not being able to pay fines or fees. In prison, people lack certain basic hygiene necessities, and the state has been using prison labor without paying minimum wage. The People's Briefing, Thursday, April 16th, offers a sharp contrast to Governor Cuomo's daily briefings, where he fails to talk about or give updates or take action during the pandemic that we're in to help those who are incarcerated in New York's jails, prisons, juvenile detention centers, and immigration detention. Instead, he takes advantage of prison labor without acknowledgement and without paying those inside minimum wages. And there's more. Here's Katie Schaefer. She's with the Center for Community Alternatives, Director of Advocacy. She's organized this COVID crisis behind bars, People's Briefing.
We are here. This is the People's Briefing. We have seen day after day as Governor Cuomo has held daily press briefings on the coronavirus that he has consistently and conspicuously ignored New Yorkers behind bars. He has not spoken to the issues faced by New Yorkers in jails, in prisons, in juvenile detention centers, in immigration detention across this state. And when asked by reporters, he has pushed off those questions. We are also here to demand action. Governor Cuomo must release people from jails, from prisons. He must release young people from youth prisons, and he must work to see immigrants released from ICE detention as well. For people who remain behind bars, it is also incumbent upon him to ensure that New Yorkers can protect themselves from the virus, which he has so far not done, as we have seen incarcerated people have lack of access to soap, lack of access to face masks. And so we are here to insist that action is taken. Our first speaker is Jose Saldana, the director of the Release Aging People from Prison campaign.
There's one thing that really troubles me, it troubles a lot of us with Governor Cuomo. Not only does he ignore the plight incarcerated people across New York State in 52 prisons, he's actually ignored a fact that the fatalities from this pandemic virus is mostly people of color. And that's something that he has to address. You know, it exposes a double standard of healthcare, and he's not addressing that. And he's not addressing that because he doesn't consider us to be his constituents. You know, people of color, people incarcerated, the majority of those incarcerated are people of color. Our families are supposed to be constituents of his, but he doesn't value our constituency. This is why he can go on and ignore the moral obligation that he has to address this issue in a humanitarian way.
Thank you, Jose. Next up, we have Phil Miller from the Correctional Association. We will continue to hear about the crisis of COVID-19 in New York State prisons that will be followed by the crisis in New York State jails, then New York immigration detention centers, followed by youth prisons, followed by the crisis faced by women, then issues related to prison labor and phone calls and access to families, and finally issues of economic justice and fines and fees during the COVID-19 pandemic. Phil Miller from the Correctional Association, up now.
Thank you for that introduction, and thanks to everyone else who's participating in this. Despite the fact that COVID-19 is a serious health risk, it's a pandemic, we're getting reports from people who are incarcerated that are saying that people with high fevers, like over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, are left in their living areas for at least a couple of days before they're being taken out and being moved to an isolation area. I think the virus outbreak in docks is actually larger than they're letting the public know. There are huge differences in positive test results for staff and positive test results for incarcerated people. There's a huge disparity in those numbers, with they're showing staff as the more infected people rather than the incarcerated population. And I think if those numbers are accurate from their viewpoint, I think there's a huge disparity in testing practices, where the staff actually have access to tests and the incarcerated population do not until they exhibit like severe symptoms already. And although DOCS recently announced that it would release people who were within 90 days of their release if they were 55 years or older and were convicted of a nonviolent, non-sex offense, it's not enough. That under those criteria, only about 170 people will be released. There are so many more that could be released if those criteria were changed.
Thank you, Phil. So Phil and Jose just covered some of the issues that we are seeing for people inside prisons. We will now hear from the Legal Aid Society, who will share some of what we're hearing about the COVID-19 crisis in jails. Veronica?
Veronica Vella. I am with the Prisoners Rights Project, which is a part of the Legal Aid Society that does advocacy and litigation on behalf of people who are incarcerated in New York City and in New York State prisons. We've heard that people who are testing positive are being moved to EMTC, which is a facility that actually closed several months ago as part of the movement towards closing Rikers. But we're also hearing from people that they were moved to EMTC even though they didn't have symptoms or they didn't, haven't gotten results from a test. And so some of those areas at EMTC are dorm areas. And if you're moved into a dorm area and you haven't tested positive, then, people are getting really anxious and worried and scared that even if they haven't already been exposed, that they will be exposed. So, we're going to continue to make motions to get clients out of the jails and the prisons. The Legal Aid Society, Prisoners' Rights Project, is also going to be filing a series of writs on behalf of people who are in the state facilities. And I think that's going to be filed, this week. So, we have some optimism that that will get at least some people out of the state facilities also.
Thank you, Veronica. Governor Cuomo continues to hold daily briefings. At each of his daily briefings, there is a slideshow. There has never been a single slide related to New Yorkers or other people behind bars in New York State. We wish to rectify that. The inability of to cease its spread, given the close confined nature of jails, prisons, and detention centers, how deeply impossible safety measures are in those close confines, the lack of access to masks, to testing, and to other kinds of resources. It is critical that Governor Cuomo release people now. Up next, we have Hannah McCree, the senior staff attorney at the New York Immigration Family Unity Project at Brooklyn Defender Services.
We are the first in the country assigned counsel program for people who are detained and facing deportation. We represent people who are detained primarily at four county jails in the New York City area. Three of those jails are located in New Jersey. Those are in Hudson, Essex, and Bergen counties. And one of them is located in Orange County in Goshen, New York, in the Hudson Valley. And what we're hearing from our clients who are detained in these facilities is very alarming and really echoes what a lot of the other speakers today have been describing about the conditions in other New York state and local jails. About a quarter of the people we represent are detained in the Orange County Jail in the Hudson Valley in Orange County. That jail, although it's not currently reporting any positive cases, we are very concerned for the welfare of our clients who are detained there. What we're hearing about the conditions in the jails is very concerning because it just is very clear that that jail is not observing a lot of the best practices and advice of public health officials that we've all been told to follow, most notably social distancing. People who are detained in that jail are largely free to mingle with each other when they're outside of their cell. They're sharing common areas like gym equipment and telephones and showers. We're hearing that there's no intermittent cleaning of those shared surfaces. There's absolutely no hand sanitizer. We're hearing about shortages of soap, a lack of, well, complete lack of personal protective equipment for clients who are in Orange County Jail in ICE custody. And we're also just hearing generally about a lack of education, certainly in any language, English or any other language, to people who are in ICE custody about how to protect oneself from spread of the virus. We're hearing about, as many other, it sounds like, people who are detained in the state of New York are reporting very slow or dismissive responses to calls for medical attention and requests for medical attention, and just a complete lack of clear testing criteria as to whether and when anyone would be tested.
Thank you, Hannah. Up next, we have Derek Kane, the Director of Client Services at the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund.
You know, hopefully everyone is doing their best to stay connected, committed, and healthy during this pandemic. Katie, I'd like to thank you personally, as well as Marvin and all those who are in coalition, for their tireless work that you do and have been doing. My name is Derek and Cozy Kane. I am from the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund in conjunction with this latest initiative, the New York Immigrant Freedom Fund. From 2015 to 2019, the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund has paid bail for nearly 5,000 people from pretrial detention. And in 2018, we formed our New York Immigrant Freedom Fund program to stop the cycle of abusive imprisonment for immigrant New Yorkers. Since 2018, we've freed more than 400 people from ICE detention and provided them with critical post-release support. For years, we've seen the harmful and deadly impact of jails and immigration detention on vulnerable and marginalized communities. Now we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and both the governor and law enforcement continue to sit back while people are growing sicker and dying in incarceration. Just as Rikers is the epicenter of the virus with over 7 times the COVID rate of New York City, immigration jails in New York and New Jersey have reported to be both toxic and underprepared for this moment, thus making immigration detention facilities fertile places for the spread of COVID-19. ICE has a long history, as we all know, of medical neglect. Even before COVID-19, people were dying in immigration detention facilities, children included. Since mid-March, we've bonded out over 40 people, double the usual amount that we generally do, thanks to emergency fundraising. This includes a lot of people with underlying conditions, people who needed to care for their loved ones. We recently paid bond to free a fellow New Yorker who just got out just in time to see his father, who is dying on a ventilator as it relates to COVID-19. But ICE is continuing to set bonds at high amounts, irrespective. We've recently paid bond up to $25,000 for a single person, $25,000. How is ICE expecting families to pay that, especially now given the current status? No one should ever have to pay a ransom to get out, but especially not now in the middle of a public health crisis. After increased pressure from incarcerated people and grassroots voices, more than 200 immigrants were released from ICE detention just last month. But even that's not enough. There are still thousands of people who are left behind. The New York Immigrant Freedom Fund, in conjunction with the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund, stand with our allies to demand the release of people from prisons, jails, starting with the elderly people who are at high risk of death, of severe illness, fighting as it relates to COVID-19. This includes ICE detainees who are incarcerated in local jails and all people held on pretrial technical parole violations and pretrial detentions. We ask for their immediate release. This is not only a criminal justice issue, it is also a public health issue. Katie, thank you for allowing me a few moments to articulate what we've seen through the eyes of our clients and at the organization.
Thank you so much, Derek Kane. We have one more speaker who will speak to the issue of immigration detention centers. We will then move on to updates from youth prisons across New York State. Up next is Jennifer Connor, Justice for Migrant Families, Western New York.
We're located in Buffalo, New York, 40 miles from the Buffalo Federal Detention Facility, a federally owned immigration detention facility. And under normal conditions, we do a great deal of support for people who are detained in Batavia. We have a grassroots network, we do visitations, and we provide all kinds of support so that people can have their basic needs met inside, have some humanity, and also to support their release and their getting out under normal circumstances. Everything has changed under COVID, and we have been closely monitoring the deteriorating situation inside Batavia. So I want to share one story that I think is illustrative from inside the facility. This person asked to have his story shared. A month ago, a young man with asthma repeatedly asked to be given a refill for his inhaler. And for 2 weeks, the pharmacy in Batavia was out of his medication. After 2 weeks, he had a severe respiratory attack and was rushed to the emergency room, where he was finally given an inhaler. That same person is being denied release right now. He's also experiencing difficulty breathing, fever, and he is being denied access to medical call. And in his words, he said, "I am a human being. They are letting me die here. What would happen if I die? No one would know." So I know we're gathered here to say that's not true. We are watching and we are demanding release. And I think that something that's important in this moment is that there's some names that have not been in the media. And one name that really we should be talking about, at least in terms of Batavia immigrant detention, is the Buffalo DHS field office director, Thomas Feely. He has the power to respond in a more responsible way to this disaster and to release people on humanitarian parole. And our county and state authorities have the responsibility to pressure him to do so, because we know that right now his response is a cover-up. We know that this past weekend they transferred 30 to 50 people to facilities in Texas and Louisiana from Batavia. We know that some of those people have since tested positive. So Batavia's numbers look lower because they shipped sick people to other states. We know that some of those people in the Texas facility have been in their same dirty clothes in a quote unquote quarantine section since Saturday, as of yesterday. So that's 5 days in their same dirty clothes. This is not protection, this is a cover up, and we need to call on Thomas Feely, our DHS director, and we need to call on our state authorities to bring pressure on those people. Immigrant detention in our state does not exist in a vacuum. We as a state have a responsibility to address this public health crisis and to stand in solidarity also with people in all jails in New York.
Thank you, Jennifer. We are here holding the people's briefing, calling on Governor Cuomo in his daily press briefings to attend to people behind bars in New York State, in jails, in prisons, in detention centers. We cannot ignore the crisis of COVID-19 for our loved ones and neighbors behind bars. Turn it over to Serena Longori, who is the executive director of New Hour for Women and Children in Long Island, who will talk specifically about the COVID-19 crisis for women and children in jails and prisons across the state.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you for organizing such a powerful community of those of us who are in the minority in terms of folks who care about this forgotten population. New Hour on Long Island has over 1,000 women in the jails that we worked with last year. Our programming is suspended right now because of COVID, and we have, along with statewide support from other organizations, including WCJA, created a very new women's task force to take a look and demand transparency in women's facilities, and also to demand release and clemency for women. One of the things that we see is there are 1,961 women as of December of 2019 statewide in women's prisons. Anyone serving over a year is there. Two of those prisons have nurseries for mothers to bond with their babies after they've given birth. So right now there are mothers and babies in the prisons. There are pregnant women in the prisons and jails. And what we know from what we've heard from all of our speakers is that DOCS, DOC, our local sheriffs are not doing nearly enough to prevent the deaths and the illness that is going and happening to all of our loved ones behind bars. I will say that as somebody who is formerly incarcerated myself, thinking about being in prison or jail right now, you know, it is overwhelming to think about the level of fear and stress that folks are facing behind bars. What we are hearing from women who call our office from the prisons is that they were just this week given a handkerchief that has been state issued. They have been told not to get it dirty, that they won't be given more if they need more. These are not face masks. These are simply state issued cloth for them to wear. We've heard retaliation, that women who raise concerns are being retaliated against. We've also heard that officers are telling women, if you get sick, you're being thrown in the box, which is SHU, Security Housing Unit. So what we know about prisons and jails is what we've always known, that they are inhumane and that they do nothing to preserve life and dignity and humanity. Thank you,
Pete. Thank you, Serena. Up next is Bianca Tylik, founder and executive director of Worth Rises.
Thank you, Katie. We echo all of the calls to release as many people as possible from all of the facilities that we're talking about, from state prisons, from county jails, from immigration detention facilities, from youth prisons. And with all of that, also noting that there is a tremendous amount of exploitation happening to those that are left behind bars, those that are still behind bars. And so I want to talk about two really specific things. One is prison labor. It has been absolutely reprehensible what Governor Cuomo has been doing in the use and utility of prison labor, and in many ways mocking prison labor. He has got on his briefings that we are here to oppose and talked about the hand sanitizer being made by people inside. But what he didn't say was that it was being made by people inside. He said it was made by the state. The state does not make anything. People make things. And there are those people that are making the hand sanitizer, this life-saving hand sanitizer that is being distributed across the state, is being made inside of our prisons. And in those prisons, only until recently, only until we fought and we challenged the docs, did we actually get them to even hand out hand sanitizer to all the facilities. And we are hearing that implementation is not consistent, and that there are still many people within the prison facilities that do not have access to that hand sanitizer. But it's important to note that this is not new behavior for Governor Cuomo. This is something that's been going on for a very long time. And I don't just mean that in the sense that prison labor has existed for a long time and the state has been using prison labor for many really challenging things, including asbestos abatement, to just regular functions of the DMV, call centers, all for just cents an hour is what people are paid. But in many times where there is an emergency or a call for an emergency response, people who are incarcerated are the ones who are tapped. And just last year, the governor even tapped incarcerated workers as a revenue generator. That was when he decided that in order to create revenue for the state, we would have everyone require everyone to get a new license plate. All of license plates are made inside prisons. So once again, continuously just using labor inside without ever even acknowledging it demanding fair wages and safe and sanitized working conditions. And so the thing that we are absolutely demanding is that people who are incarcerated, that their value of their labor is recognized and that they are paid minimum wage, because their labor, like everyone else's right now, all of our frontline workers, is critical to saving lives, but also that we do that sort of in the long term. Everything that we have heard about the dire situation in our state prisons is creating an incredible amount of anxiety for families on the outside. And as we are all in our homes and we are dying for those connections, for those who are at the epicenter of this crisis, those Rikers and all of the facilities throughout the state, that human connection is so wildly important right now and always, but especially right now, especially with visits having being ended. And instead of providing fully free phone calls, people are being asked to ration a few calls. And Cuomo wants to consistently pitch himself sort of against the leadership in DC. But in this case, the leadership in DC has actually gone way further and done more than Cuomo, because right now, as of last week, the federal prison system has made all phone calls free across the entire system and across all federal prisons. But in New York State and in our county jails and our state prisons, people are still being asked to pay for calls in our county jails as much as $10 for a 15-minute phone call. And being asked to ration pittances of responses on free phone calls. Additionally, for those who don't know, people inside prisons and jails also pay for emails in a way that we do not on the outside. They are actually required to come with stamps, and people are still being required to pay for emails during this crisis. So that is, you know, something that feels absolutely uncalled for in a regular environment, but certainly in this environment, it comes at nearly no cost to anyone.
Thank you, Bianca. Our final speaker is Katie Adamidis from the Fines and Fees Justice Center. Fines and fees are needlessly putting New Yorkers' lives at stake. New York locks people up for not paying fines and fees. And in a time when we're all supposed to be physical distancing, people are being confined with each other simply because they don't pay their fines and fees or can't pay their fines and fees. In addition to the risk of being confined with other people, people behind bars then face dozens of additional fees, including money transfer fees, that make it nearly impossible to be able to afford basic health and hygiene supplies that they need to be able to keep themselves safe. And these folks rely on their commissary accounts to be able to pay for these basic necessities. But these accounts are aggressively garnished to pay fines and fees before the remaining balance, if there is any, can be applied to basic necessities. New York must stop its current fines and fees practices that are recklessly risking lives and exploiting people behind bars. New York should stop locking people up for not paying fines and fees. We know that one of the most common criminal charges in New York State is driving on a suspended license. And we also know that the vast majority of these suspensions are debt-related, not safety-related. Arresting these drivers was bad practice before COVID-19, but it is even more outrageous during COVID-19. New York should stop issuing warrants for non-payment and vacate existing warrants for non-payment. And New York should stop allowing probation and parole extension or revocation for not paying fines and fees or for other technical violations. And New York must stop collecting fines and fees, especially from commissary accounts. And New York needs to provide, as other panelists have said, free soap, free hand sanitizer, other disinfecting products to people behind bars. But regardless of whether New Yorkers are behind bars or on the outside, New York must waive all fees from the criminal legal system. We need these fines and fees reforms now to allow all New Yorkers to keep themselves safe and healthy. Lives literally depend on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Governor Cuomo's daily briefings have refused to acknowledge the plight of people behind bars. When asked, he has brushed aside these questions, but tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers are in jail or love somebody in jail, in prison, in detention centers, in youth prisons. These are our family members, they are our neighbors, and they deserve to be released. They have not been sentenced to a death sentence. We cannot allow the creation of death camps in New York State. Governor Cuomo must take action to let them go, to grant clemency now, and for any people who remain behind bars, to ensure they are paid adequate wages, that their health and safety is taken into account.
You've been listening to the People's Briefing, The COVID Crisis Behind Bars. You heard advocates from Brooklyn Defenders Services, Brooklyn Community Bail Funds, the Center for Community Alternatives, Correctional Association of New York, Release Aging People from Prisons, Fines and Fees Justice Center, Justice for Migrant Families, Legal Aid Society, New Hour for Women and Children, and Worth Rises. Panelists described the horrible and tragic situation unfolding in prisons, jails, immigration detention centers, youth prisons, and women's prisons. Thanks to Katie Schaefer with the Center for Community Alternatives, who hosted this program. This is listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Thanks for listening.